Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. It has been almost exactly 2 years since Alaskans somewhat unexpectedly became the third state to approve the commercial sale of marijuana. It's been legal to smoke for a while now, but we don't actually have stores up and running. We will very, very soon. And that's our topic today. What is it going to be like when we have marijuana shops and marijuana growers all over Alaska? It's pretty much completely legal. And what will that look like for our town? And what will it be like to shop in those places? Also, just how is this new industry going to work? And I've got two industry members in the studio with me today to talk about it. And we're also looking forward to hearing from you with your questions and your comments. And are you excited? And what do you want to know about your opportunity to just walk into a marijuana shop and buy some pot? It's such a strange thing to be looking forward to. And it's so surprising that it's actually here, even after all the media coverage and all the discussion that's gone on over the last 2 years. My guests today are Mark Maligoti. He is the CEO of Cantest. Dr. Mark Maligoti is a PhD scientist, and his business is testing marijuana to make sure it's pure and ready to go to stores. And he's up and running. You're in business, right, Mark?
Yeah, that's correct.
And my other guest is Lily Bosshart. She owns a shop called Dankeridge, which is at the corner of Spinard Road and Benson. It's where the old hobby shop used to be, and then I guess there's an insurance broker there. And your signs are up, and looks like you're very close to opening, eh, Lily?
Absolutely. Early December.
Okay. So tell me why you decided to get into the marijuana business.
Well, being a small business owner is something that I was always really interested in, so the opportunity presented itself. And I think that my team and myself present a really unique perspective on it. We were able to find this fantastic location that we're really excited about, and I think the business that we're creating is going to be really unique here in Anchorage, and it's really fun to be part of an industry that people are excited about, so that was part of it too, just the enthusiasm and the excitement. It's infectious.
Mark, you started a business that obviously has a lot of front-end investment with the scientific equipment and the it's a really high-tech process to test marijuana. How did you decide that this was a good business to get into?
Well, I've been a small business owner for about 15 to 20 years. I had a business in software in Pittsburgh, and always wanted to move to Alaska, and about 8 years ago I had the chance to move out here and decided it wasn't very good running a business from Alaska that was located in Pittsburgh. So I sold off that business and was really looking for a new business to get into, you know, that was actually based here in Alaska and I could have Alaska employees. Around about the same time is when the Proposition 2 passed, and being a scientist, you know, my whole life and finding it to be a very exciting industry, how often do you have the chance to be on the ground floor of a new industry? And from my previous business, I had the ability to capitalize my next business. So, you know, I thought, hey, I think I'm going to go for this and start out on a new business venture.
Interesting. Well, I want to hear all about it. There's so much to this topic. Part of it is this the business aspect of it. You know, how is it going to work? Mm-hmm. And part of it is the regulation, and then also what it will be like for customers. And I think that our listeners are going to have questions too. So let me give out the phone number if you'd like to get on the air with our guests if you have questions or comments or concerns about the new industry, which is about to start, and is starting right now in Alaska, the marijuana industry. The phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. The email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org, and if you send an email, I can read it to my guests on the air. So, Lily, you came up with this name Dankeridge. You have to tell us about the name, and it suggests to me that you're trying to have a little fun with this.
Absolutely. You know, we are business owners. We are running a really tight ship, but at the end of the day, we're selling a product that's fun. We want people to enjoy coming in our store, and I think our name is a nod to that. Dank means really great cannabis, and it just works on the front of Anchorage. And it's just something that we hit on, and it felt right to the whole team immediately. And so it's exciting because most of the decisions that we've made have not felt have taken a lot more work than in the name.
A lot of effort.
Yes.
Yeah. So it highlights something that I think has been interesting, which is that as marijuana has become legal in Alaska, a lot of sort of the drug culture terminology has entered sort of mainstream terminology. And so you'll hear officials and the newspaper talking about a grow operation, which is a phrase you never would have heard outside of talking about something illegal before. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't call like Matsu lettuce farmers, you know, they're not doing grow operations. Are there other examples of that? I mean, and do you feel like it's sort of taking that culture and bringing it mainstream?
Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about flour and shatter and glass and wax. And, you know, you go to professional conventions with people who are in ancillary businesses, security, and all sorts of other industries, and they're all speaking marijuana terminology. Uh-huh. And so it's not something that I was super familiar with before starting the business. I mean, marijuana was not my business beforehand. And mm-hmm. so it's a little bit of a learning curve, sort of like their whole own language. But I like that it's becoming mainstream because, you know, it legitimizes the entire industry. The fact that this isn't something scary, it's not, you know, it doesn't need to be behind closed doors. It's something that adults can consume legally.
Is that something you're trying to do? Is because I, you know, if I think about in the past, sort of the dealer and then the sort of the head shop is always seems a little dodgy. And
absolutely.
Like, and you're trying to do something that's going to dispel that.
Yes, I mean, I am a mother and a working young professional, and I want a store that feels fun and like someplace I'd want to be. Going into a tobacco shop is not something that I do because I just find them intimidating and not something that somewhere I'd feel comfortable. And that's mm-hmm. absolutely not what we want in our store. I mean, we want it to be someplace that everyone over the age of 21 feels comfortable and loves being in there, and it's bright and friendly, and there's nothing shady or secretive about it.
Interesting. Let's go to a caller. Fred is calling from Anchorage. Fred?
Hi. Over the last 25 years or so, there's been a lot of talk from the anti-marijuana crowd that, you know, it's not your grandfather's marijuana anymore. Certainly, it is much, much stronger now than it was in the 60s. And I've discovered in California that they sell lots of edibles, which have very clear dosages, standardized dosages. You get exactly how many milligrams of THC you get with a little square. Are we going to have that kind of thing in Alaska?
Good question. I'm going to turn to my guest Mark Malagodi from Cantest for that one. There was this column that was, I think, became pretty famous that Maureen Dowd wrote in the New York Times about getting an edible in Colorado and being like freaked out, like
yeah,
way too
I'm
big
familiar
of a dose.
With that, yes.
Yeah.
And to answer your question, yes, there's a maximum of 6 milligrams of THC that's allowed in an edible in Alaska. That's actually significantly lower than Colorado. Colorado allows 10 milligrams of THC. You can also have multiple serving edibles, but they need to be delineated, and each of the servings can't have more than 6 milligrams, and you can't have more than 10 milligrams, 10 servings in one, purchase, and that would be 60 milligrams, and it all has to be homogeneous in the mixture.
Mm,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
And how about the other, is it CBDs, the other part of the...
Well, CBD is non-psychoactive, so there isn't any limit on CBD. CBD is more for a medical marijuana use.
Okay.
So we have a limit. We have a limit of 6 milligrams, but we don't know if it might be 4 or 3 or 2.
No. I'm sorry. I should have expanded on that answer. We test every edible batch that comes in, and we mark it with the number of milligrams of THC as well as CBD, and we do a 10 cannabinoid profile. So it'll be marked with all of that. I just meant that to hopefully not have the incident that
right.
Charles talked about, that it is a maximum of 6 milligrams.
All right. Great question,
Fred.
Yes, that's
exactly what I was worried about, too. I'm very happy to hear that. Thank you.
Okay.
there's been so much effort that's gone into this regulation of this industry that I have to frankly say that I kind of lost track of it. You know, it seemed like every day there was another article, and how much do I need to know about this? So I'm glad to hear that there's a limit on the dosage of the edibles. What about sort of the smoking marijuana? How do you test the potency of that and the dosage of that too?
Right. The flower is also tested.
Flower. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. And there isn't a limit on that, but mm-hmm. we put it on the package. And he's right that it is far more potent than it used to be. What we've tested so far, we're seeing an average of maybe about 17-18% on THC, where back, you know, 20 years ago, you might have only seen an average of 9 to 10. So, yeah, it is more potent now than it used to be. I mean, we're seeing up to 24-25% THC, but that will be marked. People can go into a store. They can know exactly how much THC, and if it's the CBD they're interested in, then they'll be able to see that on the package too.
So I saw a picture in the newspaper, Mark, of product coming into your lab, and you were testing it. So I know mm-hmm. you've started. Have you started testing all kinds of products already?
Right now, we're just testing flower. That's really all that is out there, because first it has to be cultivated, and then it can be sold to the concentrate makers, and then concentrate makers can sell to the edibles. So,
oh, I see.
Yeah, so right now, it's only flower that's coming in. So, yeah, we've tested a significant amount of flower.
You must have your a real connection to the whole industry, because you're kind of the middleman.
That's true.
You have to be shipped to you. Yeah, it goes through you.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to how many growers you're seeing out there, how many sort of manufacturers who make edibles are out there. I mean, how big is this?
Do you mean how many are active now or how many are up and coming?
Well, I guess both, yeah.
Okay. Active, I think there's roughly around 6 or 7 that have actually harvested and are, you know, selling to retail stores. AMCO, on their website, they actually have a PDF file with all licenses listed, and I believe there's up to about 600 licenses.
Wow.
You know, active licenses probably getting close to 100 at this point. So, you know, there's definitely a fair number of licenses out there.
Right. So you are one of only a few people who are going to open labs.
Right. That's true.
It's an expensive business to get into.
Yes, it is.
So I would think there could probably be enough business for more than one lab. But yeah. It's hard for me to believe there could be enough business for 600 shops, right? I mean, that seems like a lot. Lily, what do you think?
Well, Colorado has 550, but Colorado is a way bigger state than we are.
Yeah.
You know, we are going to have less retailers than cultivators, for sure. I mean, cultivation is it's more upfront cost than some other things, but it's much easier as far as maintaining. You know, people can run a cultivation and still have a day job. So I think there are a lot more people interested in cultivating than there are retail. I mean, retail, you have to deal with customers and have employees, you know, and it's just a different animal if you want to get into the marijuana business than cultivators. So I am seeing way more licenses for cultivators than for retail shops. So it's exciting for me and the other ones that are this far. The other issue with finding retail stores is the limitations that were put on us for locations, for real estate. And so it was hard. I mean, Anchorage only has something like a 2.4 vacancy rate for commercial buildings to begin with. And then on top of that, you have all the legislation as to where you can be.
Mm-hmm. And an incredible gauntlet of approvals and licenses
absolutely.
To go through, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you must just feel like, oh, my, I mean, are you all done with your licensing?
Oh, no. I don't know if we'll ever be all done. You know, I think we're learning and we're all doing this together, the state, the city, and the people getting the licenses. We're all kind of working mm-hmm. through this process for the first time. I envision people who get into this business in 5 years will have a totally different process than what we have right now.
Simplified, perhaps.
Absolutely.
So,
pardon me.
I'm interested as a business proposition how you will differentiate yourself from other shops, because it's, you know, I know that there's another shop opening up just 2 blocks from you mm-hmm. Near Fireweed and Spinard. You're at Benson and Spinard. Mm-hmm. And will you have different product than others? Well, we have a different, I mean, I guess I can go to 2 shoe stores and they'll pretty much have the same product. but they might have a different mix or something. They've got to have something different or they're not going to both make it. At least that would be my assumption.
Right. Well, first off, I think that there is room in this industry for more than one shop on the same street. You know, I love the idea of having a couple different shops down Spinard, and people can do kind of like a tour. You know, you start at the top and you work your way down, and they have those sort of industries both in Washington and in Oregon and Colorado where it's like a cannabis tourism.
And but you can't use it in the shop.
You can't. You will be able to here in Alaska.
Oh, you will.
You will
okay.
have consumption. But no, in the other places, you cannot. But you can purchase all the different things. What makes our store different, we are going to have, you know, a boutique experience. We're going to have Alaskan-made arts and gifts. We want a store that you can come as a tourist and get some really beautiful homemade Alaskan things, as well as top shelf flower, top shelf cannabis. I love all of the really fascinating gadgets that are being made for cannabis people. You go to these trade shows and they are so creative. So I'm excited to bring a lot of that to Alaska. So I just think it's our different perspective as a buyer that'll make us our store different.
Interesting. We are talking about the marijuana industry on today's show. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. Lily Bosshart is with me. She is one of the owners of the new Dankeridge store, which hasn't opened yet, but will be, I guess, in about a month. And Dr. Mark Malagodi is the CEO of CanTest, which is a firm that's testing marijuana for potency and purity. We welcome you to come on the show with us with questions and comments. Are you happy about these developments? Are you concerned? What do you want to know about your ability now to go out and buy marijuana and even use it in a shop? You can get on the air with us by calling 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And now let's go to a call from Jim, who's calling from Anchorage. Jim?
I just had a couple of times of passing thought about how this affects the war on drugs. Now, I know our taxpayer money has been spent on billions of dollars on this since it began back in when Nixon was the president. But anyway, how is that going to impact the economy, because there's a lot of money spent on the war on drugs. Whether or not they're successful, it is being spent. So this is going to curtail some of that activity.
Right. Well, I mean, I suppose we'll still have other drugs that are illegal, such as the big problem that we have with opioids and amphetamines and that sort of thing. I don't know that our guests are really can weigh in on that in terms of, I don't know, do you guys have an opinion of whether this changes the drug picture in total?
One of my personal fascinations with marijuana is that it can help people to get off of opioids. Hopefully opioid dependency can be reduced if people were to start using marijuana for, medicinal purposes. That's one thing I would really love to see happen. And there are some studies that are indicating that that's a real possibility.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think the drug, the society is changing because, some very conservative politicians are now saying we shouldn't be imprisoning so many people for drug crimes. And it sounds like this next election, there are going to be potentially a lot more states legalizing marijuana, just as Alaska did 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the world is changing.
Yep. We have 11 states on the ballot here in November, 5 for recreation, 4 for medicinal. And if it goes through, more than half of the states will have some sort of marijuana legislation on the books. So that's exciting.
Right. It does seem like the world has really changed.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Jim. That was a good question. Mark, I'm interested in the kind of testing you are doing. It sounds like it's really at a high technical level. It's much more than many other products are tested that we ingest, like our food and supplements and that sort of thing. What are you testing for in total?
Well, the regulations were written such that there's three different types. So you have flower, you have concentrate, you have edibles. For flower, we have a requirement to test for the potency. There are five different cannabinoids that have to be tested for. It's THCA, THC, CBDA, CBD, and CBN. And you also have to test, we also have to test for E. coli, Salmonella, and three forms of Aspergillus. So the last part is just pass-fail. If anything is found during those tests, the lot fails.
And those are things that would just make people give gastrointestinal problems,
yeah,
right?
I mean, Salmonella and E. coli can be quite serious. And Aspergillus is more that if somebody has a respiratory problems, it can significantly alter, make them worse respiratory problems. And then you have the concentrates in solvent extracted concentrates, and we test for are there any residuals left on those? We test for butane and hexane and heptane, benzene, toluene. So, you know, we test for that. And then for edibles, we also test for, as we talked about earlier, a maximum of 6 milligrams, and we determine the same cannabinoids, and we also do the same microbial tests on the edibles.
So there'll be kind of a standardized product. You'll know what you're getting. Mm-hmm. How much does the testing and the transportation related to the testing and all that add to the cost of the product, do you think?
Well, the testing for commercial growers is $150 for the potency and microbial, and that's every 5-pound lot that has to be tested. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a highly significant percent anyway. I mean, if you look at what it was selling for there in the first one at $9,000, obviously it's not going to stay that high, but even if it goes down, I think Colorado was somewhere around $2,000, around $2,000 a pound. So
a pound, right?
Yeah, so I mean, and we're
on your... I don't know if we'll ever get that low. That would be lovely.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well...
I didn't really think of marijuana in terms of the pound.
In pounds.
You know, so the price to test the 5 pounds is not a very large percentage of the...
Lily, do you think the price will go down in terms of what people pay sort of on the street now, or from, you know, in the underground economy now, compared to what they'll pay in a shop, or with the taxes and the testing, will the price be higher?
Well, you know, that's our big market restrictor. We can't price ourselves out of business, because if you smoke marijuana, everyone's got a guy that sells it to you. So I can't sell it for too much more above what he's selling it for, or nobody's going to come to me. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our price point indicator. But yes, when we first start out of the gate, we have less cultivators. We have tons of upfront costs as far as getting our businesses started. And so there are businesses that are going to try and recoup some of those costs in the front. I do anticipate prices going down. They did in Colorado. The more cultivators that came online, the lower it got. It's a little low now. It might rise a little bit higher. But here in Alaska, I anticipate it going down, but I don't know that it'll ever get as low as it will in the States, just because it's 20% higher to live here.
Everything's more
around the board.
Right.
Yep.
Do you worry at all that if with the taxes and the other costs that you have, that you will have trouble competing with the black market?
No. No, just because we're offering a different experience. One, I'm hoping that people who don't have a guy, but who are interested, adult professionals.
So will, new users.
Absolutely. Or maybe users when they were kids, mm-hmm. in high school or, you know, in college. Hopefully not in high school, but in college. they stopped because they, you know, became adults and didn't want to buy illegal drugs anymore. But now that it's legal, having a place to go and not just this one type, but you have this huge spectrum of how you can consume it. And if you don't like to smoke, we have a whole bunch of other ways to consume, and at all different levels. And I think that that will bring in consumers that maybe never were all that interested, but are curious. And once you get in the store, it's hard not to try something, because it's such an attractive product, because there are so many different uses and so many different levels of intoxication, from very, very mild to not so mild.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's go to Kimberly, who's calling from Anchorage. Kimberly?
I had a question along those lines. I'm wondering if there's going to be an avenue for people who have been traditionally in the underground market to enter into the mainstream market without a lot of upfront costs. I see this new move here as with all the licenses as almost a comparable to the gentrification of, you know, lower income neighborhoods. The people who've been there, who put in the work, had ridiculous jail sentences and a lot of political, social consequences for their nonviolent lifestyle are now being kind of forced out or priced out of the industry.
That's an interesting question because it goes to the regulation, right? You can't have a criminal record or Lillian, you want to take that?
You can't have any marijuana. We can't have any felonies, period. But you can have a marijuana misdemeanor as long as it's over 5 years ago. So it doesn't keep everyone out. But I agree. You know, this industry, the way it's regulated, is very much for someone who wasn't in marijuana before, you know, who is coming in it as a business owner, because they do very clearly want to keep the black market out of the legal market. And I can understand that. You know, they don't want people to circumvent the laws. You have to, I mean, we are vetted in a million different ways in order to be able to open a store and sell this. And then the product that's coming in is also vetted and tested and to make sure, because some other states, even medicinal, it's very gray where they're getting their product from. And Alaska is we didn't have any medicinal. We're cutting straight to recreational, and we're doing it in a very regulated way. So,
Kimberly, do you is this a business that you have been in? Is this a personal issue for you?
Yeah, I've never even smoked marijuana. I've just kind of have been watching this throughout the progress here in Alaska since the 80s, where, you know, everybody had marijuana, and then nobody had marijuana, and then people were allowed to use it, you know, personally, and now they're saying, okay, you can use it and sell it. And they start basically, long before they had an avenue of doing this, they started I think they call it busting people who were growing. Just they kind of ramped up on that. And I'm like, well, why are they arresting these people when we as a state have already voted for it to be okay? And someone suggested, well, maybe they're just trying to narrow the market for their chosen few. And people who've been in it traditionally won't be able to sell it because they have this criminal history.
And we decided to, on today's show, to sort of focus on the industry. So I didn't invite anybody from law enforcement. But I think it's a good question, and I think it's an interesting perspective, and I thank you for raising it. So now we're going to go to Penny, who's calling from Anchorage. Penny, did you have a question or a comment?
Sure do. I'm a patient at a local pain clinic, and I asked the pain doctor, who was more than willing to prescribe opioids, if I could try marijuana. And he said, absolutely not, because it's still not legal federally, and he's afraid for his license. And so he tests me to see what I'm using. He would know if I was using any marijuana. How long will it be, do you think, before these doctors can come around?
Interesting. Mark, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's very unfortunate. That the doctor feels that way. I don't know specifically if it's the American Medical Association that he's worried about losing his license. I mean, do you know specifically what he's worried about?
Oh, he just said his license would be jeopardized.
They're concerned about losing their DEA license to prescribe prescribe medications. Okay. That's the conflict if you violate a federal mandate.
It sounds kind of like you could just go out and buy it in one of these shops in another couple of weeks.
I know. Excuse me. They make you sign a pain contract, and they test your urine at random times when you don't know when it's going to happen, and if a trace of any other drug, including marijuana, is found in that sample, they will jerk your pain contract and you will never be able to do it again. So I'm a little bit scared about that.
Wow, that's crazy, and it seems so counterproductive. But it's all, I think, part of this conflict that we have where it's not okay by the federal law, and it is okay by state law. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other consequences of this for the industry as well. Like, Mark, you can't ship product to places that don't have a road, right?
We can accept product. We can't accept product, right? We don't ship any product, but right.
I mean, so they can't move it from place to place. And Lily, do you have this problem with you have to only operate in cash? Is that a problem that you've got
here
too?
Right. I couldn't get any bank financing in order to start my business. I can't do any sort of banking. with cannabis, so it's all cash, which poses other issues, you know, of safety issues and storage issues. And so, yeah, there's all kinds of roadblocks to this industry that I'm hoping will be fixed by the federal government in the upcoming years. I mean, I'm hopeful that with so many states having this on the books, the federal government can't continue to just kick the can down the road.
Right, right. And hopefully that'll eventually solve your problem too,
but,
Penny.
I mean, there are many doctors that are giving medical marijuana cards.
Absolutely.
So I don't understand why, you know, a particular doctor would have such a strong feeling.
Maybe
when there's so many other, I would recommend it.
Yeah, maybe seek out a second opinion.
Yeah. All right, Penny, thanks very much. And we are going to take a break. We're talking about the marijuana industry on Hometown Alaska. And when we come back in just a moment, I'll let you know once again who our guests are, and I'll give out that phone number so that you can get on the show and ask your questions about marijuana or express your concerns or thought about this new industry, which is actually just getting started here in the state of Alaska. So stick with us as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Our topic today is the marijuana industry. Shops are popping up all over Anchorage, and you will very soon be able to go out and buy marijuana in a boutique, and it'll be totally socially acceptable, I guess, which is just a big change in our society. So we're welcoming your questions and comments with our two guests. Dr. Mark Malagodi is the CEO of CanTest, which is the lab which is testing the purity and strength of marijuana. And Lily Bossart is one of the owners of Dankeridge, which is a new shop where you'll be able to buy marijuana. It sounds like a lot of other products too, right there at the corner of Spinard Road and Benson, which seems like sort of marijuana central with that neighborhood.
Little Amsterdam is what they're calling it.
Yeah. Well, it's already sort of the cool area town. And if you have questions, comments, or want to get on the air with us, the number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we were talking a little bit about regulation and the conflict between federal and state regulation and law, and the fact that businesses are unable to use the banking system. And I'm curious as to the security aspects of that, because I would think, Lily, that you would end up having a lot of cash in your business, and that might not be very safe.
Right. Well, thankfully, there's some... there's all sorts of ancillary businesses that are sprouting up around here that have nothing to do with growing or selling marijuana, and one of them is security. And so there are several businesses in town that have opened vaults and are basically renting out square footage. And so they'll come by and do pickups, and they'll take it off the premises, because exactly, I'm not going to have a huge amount of cash on the premises. It'll be what we're operating with on the daily basis, and then try and get it to a more secure location for everyone's sake of mind as soon as possible.
So you referenced selling a lot of products other than marijuana. Mm-hmm. Will you have to do all that business in cash too?
No. Everything other than marijuana can be purchased however you'd like. We take card, cash, check, but marijuana is the only thing that has to be purchased by cash, and so it'll be two separate transactions, hopefully done quickly, right at the same time. But you will you'll bring up what you'd like merchandise-wise. We have all of the product stored securely, so you'll let me know what cannabis you'd like. You buy that with cash. You buy everything else however you'd like, and you'll get two receipts, and you're good to go.
Have you had the same problem, Mark, at the lab of the state federal thing and not be able to use banks and that sort of thing?
It's not quite as much of a problem for a lab. The labs actually don't fall under the IRS 280E rule because we don't sell any marijuana. Huh. So, yeah, it's a little different.
So you're just handling it for testing, so therefore they think you're... That's weird,
well,
isn't it?
Well, as far as, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you're not buying and selling drugs, so you're okay.
No, yeah.
Interesting.
Lucky man.
But you've got other issues, like the Postal Service won't carry it through a bit from town to town. And so the many Alaska communities off the road system, I guess, have to grow their own, and then the town is, like, I was hearing our own Zach Hughes talking about the fact that some of these communities are much too small to have a lab. So what are they going to do?
Yeah, that's an excellent question and one that's kind of being debated. A place like Nome, I know there's a grower in Nome that I was just talking to, and he does have the option of getting onto a plane and bringing a sample to me, but that's, you know, $800 round trip. I mean, for a $150 test, he's got to pay an extra $800. That makes it unfair and business-wise for him to stay, you know, with the other cultivators. So AMCO, you know, the Alaska... Marijuana Control Office, they have brought up the point that if somebody in Nome does a drug bust, they mail the drugs to Anchorage in order to have them tested. So why not, if you have a licensed business in Nome, can you not mail to a licensed business in Anchorage? So, I mean, I totally agree with that, but, you know, what the post office is going to say about it. I mean, I know there are people that are, you know, working on that issue right now.
So it'll be legal for me to get on a plane with marijuana in my luggage?
From what I've understood of the TSA so far and what AMCO has told me, that if it's a small amount, they didn't define a small amount, but we only take 4 grams for a sample, so I can't imagine that 4 grams would not be considered small and is staying in state, that it will be okay to fly.
Okay. But if you flew across state lines, then it would be
no, you can't. Yeah, you cannot fly across state lines with any amount, I don't believe.
Okay, let's go to John, who's calling from Willow. John, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted a little follow-up on the last caller talking about flying with cannabis. I actually got a conviction for 0.1 gram that I had in my luggage going through Anchorage International. But
When was that?
I don't know how much stock I would put into going through the airport.
When did that take place?
It was a few years ago, but, you know, it wasn't like the 60s, I'll say that.
Okay.
It was this decade.
Yeah, interesting. So, all right.
Anyway, the two questions I had was, one, when is the tax collected? Is it collected at every transaction from the grower to the processor to the edible maker to the retail location?
Interesting question. Who do you want to take that, Lily?
So there's a tax on the flower from the cultivators, and it's $800 a pound. And then there is a sales tax that I collect for the state and hold, which is 5%. And other than that, that's the tax system as far as I know. So the cultivators and the majority of them are passing that tax on to me. And so I'm trying to mitigate it, but I have to pass a little bit off of that on to the customer as well.
Right. Also, I make edibles, and I'm wondering, is there different grades of marijuana available from the grower?
Mm-hmm.
Because you as the retail person obviously want the finer flowers, the bigger tops, that kind of stuff. And as we all know, that you know, not all parts of the plant are the same.
Right.
So
the cultivators...
is there a cooking class of... less expensive on the market, or how is that going to work out?
Absolutely. It's called trim. Mm-hmm. And when you're bringing in, I mean, it's a plant, and it's actually a super leafy plant. I don't know if you've ever seen a marijuana plant, but very little of it is actually the bud. And so all of that trim, for the most part, is collected, and then that is what they grind down and make into concentrates for edibles and oils and all of that. And so you have your flower and then your bud, your trim.
Who grinds that down?
You'd have to talk to cultivators, but I'm sure that either the cultivator will grind it and then sell it to you as a bag of trim, or they will sell you a bag of trim probably cheaper, and then you grind it down yourself.
Mark, is this a this is another part of the industry, right? Where there going to be people doing that manufacturing?
Well, we test both for flower and separately test for trim. You know, the trim's going to come out with a lower THC, but that's typically what gets sold for the extractions.
Have those businesses set up yet that are creating the extract?
There have been a few that have been licensed so far. I don't know that there are any actually operational in business at this point, but we have tested trim as well as flower, so there must be an avenue that they're expecting to sell it to.
All right. Well, thanks, John. Those are good questions. We're going to move on to Philip now, who is calling from Anchorage with a question or comment. Philip?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm actually just following up on a comment of I'm a physician in the area, and I was just following up on the comment that, you know, as a practitioner, prescribing somebody an opioid who's taking a known federally illegal substance, you can lose your license. And that is actually something that's, you know, concerning for a lot of people. You know, we don't make the federal laws, but we certainly have to abide by them. And, I sympathize with my patients that I can't prescribe those things to, but, you know, we work really hard to gain our medical degree and go through residency and go through all the training, and that could be easily taken away. And it's something that's recognized on a national level. I trained in Oregon, and when it became legal in Oregon, this was the same dilemma. So, as a provider who's worked a long time to get their license and on their career path, it's not really up to us. It's not a discretionary thing. I mean, it says very clearly, if you're prescribing a controlled substance to somebody who's taking an illicit one, you know, you're in jeopardy of your medical license. That's a national law.
I guess the question is that if it's legal, then it's not illicit, but it is according to the DEA, so that's where you get into trouble.
Right. Then how right.
Do you think that marijuana is a legitimate medicine that you would want to prescribe for various things?
Well, there's been the issue, of course, with a lot of naturopathic or, you know, medicinal, non-pharmaceutical driven studies is that there aren't very good Class A evidence. If you look up a Cochrane review for marijuana, and that's the sort of gold standard that most providers use as what they use to base their, you know, their decisions for medicines, there are no Class A studies for marijuana. The closest one that they have is for a condition called CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome, but it's not a double-blinded placebo-controlled study. So it's hard to justifiably use it. I mean, anecdotally, I mean, I have many, there are thousands of people that I've run across that have said, oh, this is the only thing that works. I hate opioids. I mean, nobody likes opioids. I mean, there's a war on opioids right now, and it's well justified, but you know, for some people, it's the only thing that works. For other people, it's marijuana. And, you know, to have that denied from them or in combination with other medications, I think is a bit ridiculous in my own opinion. But unfortunately, you know, there aren't a lot of Class A studies to back up that opinion.
Right. So there's going to have to be some new regulation at the federal level. And I thank you. I think we're going to have to move on because we have other callers. But I appreciate your call, Philip. It's Hometown Alaska. We're talking about the marijuana industry. And my guests are Lily Bosshart from Dankeridge, which is a new shop in town, and Dr. Mark Malagodi, who is the CEO of Cantest, which is testing marijuana for its potency and purity. And we want to hear your calls at 550-8433. We have about 15 minutes left, and email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Now let's go to Phil, who's calling from Anchorage. Phil?
Hi, yeah. I was wondering, do you guys have any plans for, like, community outreach or community events? Kind of going off what they were talking about just a minute ago, is there any possibility for a grow-op or co-ops for people that are older or less fortunate that could
Is there a possibility for programs like that to happen or be legal?
So you're saying a co-op where you wouldn't have to go to a shop and buy it at retail?
I mean, are retail sponsored co-ops for people? I don't know. Could there be a service like that in Anchorage or Alaska? I'm not saying to take away from the retail, but just a community program.
Hmm. Interesting idea, Lily.
Well, part of our business is to give back, not giving away marijuana to those less fortunate, but giving back financially to those less fortunate is definitely something, you know, we want the Spinard community and then the Anchorage community as a whole to be really happy with our presence. And giving back is a huge part of our business plan. We're going to be into the arts community in a great deal. As far as giving marijuana to those less fortunate, I would love to be able to do that. Currently, that's not set up for us. You know, Oregon is now talking about legalizing delivery, and I envision that to be for those who are, you know, unable to leave their homes, have no transportation, but still have medical needs for it. That would be something nice to see. I don't know if that's in our future anytime soon either.
All right. Thanks, Phil. Lily, I'm curious about your feelings about the regulation and the way it's been set up. You spoke earlier about just how difficult it was to get set up and licensed. And just in reading about this, it sounds like there's some rules about, well, how many people can come into a shop and you know, I guess if there are more people, they have to be kept outside or something. And it seems like a very complicated business to run. Is it overregulated in your opinion?
I think there are some very strict redundancies that are happening that I'm hoping as the industry comes in and communities become comfortable with us being there and we prove ourselves to be a useful asset in the state, that we can dial back some of those. Because personally, I don't believe that we have any more threat, in fact, much, much less than any liquor store. And the liquor store regulations are considerably less stringent than ours. Mm-hmm. And so I understand it's a new industry and everyone's, you know, handling it with kid gloves. So I'm rolling with the punches, but it's pretty intense to every single time that you turn in a form or a permit to be told, well, how about this one? And so it's the name of the game is flexibility and taking it one day at a time and just keep moving forward and to not get knocked back by any of these. I do feel that every individual in government that I've worked with has been really positive, really helpful, supportive of the industry, which I didn't necessarily feel 3 years ago, 2 years ago. There's been a big turn in attitudes, which is really nice and helpful. But the regulations were set up maybe when those attitudes weren't as friendly. So I'm hoping over the course of these next 5, 6, 7 years, we can dial down some of it because there will be proven evidence, hopefully.
Sounds like it's going to be very inconvenient.
It's inconvenient to the...
To run the store if you want to go in a store and they won't let you in the door. I mean, it's...
Right. It just means a lot of...
If there's somebody in there who's like shopping in a leisurely way, the next person can't come in?
You have to wait your turn in a lot of the stores, right?
That seems like it would be hard for you to actually make money because...
It's required a lot of creative thinking and a lot of legwork on our end to make the customer experience the best it possibly can be while we're still keeping all the regulations in mind, while we're still keeping the state and their, you know, the spirit of the law in mind, but also making our place a friendly, fun, not jail-like setting for people to come and recreationally buy cannabis. So I do see it getting less stringent as the years go on, but I accept that this is the industry that I decided to go into, and all of the complications that have come with it, we're working through it. So...
Now, if I go into a bar or a liquor store and I'm intoxicated, they're legally not supposed to serve me. If someone is like obviously stoned, are you not supposed to sell them more marijuana?
Absolutely not. Yeah. Okay. And that's something that we have vowed to do for the state and for the city. All of our employees are trained to know what an intoxicated person looks like. And are, you know, we don't want to compound any issues. I certainly don't want to be responsible for someone having an accident driving away from my store. So I am absolutely cognizant of everyone who comes in the store, making sure that they are in the right frame of mind to be purchasing an intoxicating substance.
All right. Mark, what about you? Kind of the same topic about the regulation, and if you feel that there's been any overregulation or some of the things that you're being required to do just maybe don't make sense or are excessive.
I mean, one, I have to agree that everyone that I've dealt with so far from the city and the state has been very supportive, and they really want to help. I mean, but there's just so many rules that are there, and they really only apply, you know, once you get into a particular regulated business like the marijuana business. I mean, for example, in my getting the business going, I spent enormous amounts of time because I didn't have 8 feet of perimeter in the building that I rented, you know, 8 feet of perimeter around the parking lot that you need to have shrubbery in.
And I'm sorry, you have to have shrubbery around their building?
Yes. You need to have landscape. You need to have 8 feet of landscaping around all shrubbery in a building that was built after 1995. And our building was built in 1995 and has been rented since 1995 without any of this. So 20 years have gone.
Is that specific to marijuana businesses?
No. Oh, okay. This is the general municipal code. But because no other business is regulated, 20 years went by and the city, you know, did not know or didn't care that there wasn't 8 feet of shrubbery around the perimeter. But when we went to go in there, they looked at it and said, you know, you got to have 8 feet of shrubbery. And I would have loved to have been spending the time doing calibrations of my equipment to work with my scientific director, you know, to make a better lab. But instead, I spent incredible amounts of time dealing with the 8 feet of perimeter issue.
Wow.
You
know?
Dealing with bushes.
Bushes, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's
not the marijuana plant,
so
but other plants.
Right.
So it's a general, like, a planning ordinance that might not have been enforced because it didn't come to their attention, but because you're so regulated, mm-hmm. everything's being enforced.
Exactly.
And that sort of is adding up. I got you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we just have a few minutes left, but time for maybe another caller. If we have anyone who wants to talk about the marijuana industry, the number here is 550-8433. I guess the police have always had the issue of driving under the influence is already a crime. I guess there's issues about how you test that, and that's something that'll have to be worked out. So there's all these many different areas that have to be resolved. But Lily, you were saying something I didn't realize, which is I can come into your shop and use the marijuana right there. So it's almost, is that true?
Not yet, but
well,
there's a separate consumption license that
is
available.
See.
And so no, my shop doesn't have it, but when it is available, they're kind of pushing it a little bit. First they're doing retail and then cultivation to get this industry up and running.
I got you.
But we did vote in as a state that we can do consumption, and we're the only state to do that. And so I would anticipate a year from now some consumption locations opening up. And that means that, yes, on site you can eat edibles. There'll be cafes. There'll be I don't envision them having indoor smoking because we do have a lot of smoking ordinances here in the state.
Mm-hmm.
But they will be outdoor smoking. There'll be indoor vaping.
Is that something you want to do?
At some point, our location currently fits better as a retail store exclusively, but it's an avenue that I think is super interesting. It makes our state different than all the other ones. I think it's great for tourism. So, yeah, I think it's an avenue that we'd get into down the road. Right now, I'm wrapping my head around a retail cannabis store, and that is enough.
Do you imagine it like a brewery or a winery tour kind of thing, or do you imagine it more like a tavern or a nightclub kind of thing?
I think people will go both ways.
Uh-huh.
I think in my view of it, it would be really interesting and fun to have a bakery, a cafe. You have infused things you can put in your coffee. You have candies and cupcakes. And, you know, I come at it from a female perspective, but I think it would be really fun to have basically a bakery, a high-end bakery that had consumables on site. And so, but that has a whole nother level of regulation. You know, how do you... serve and not overserve, and who individual tolerance is. And so that's a whole nother thing. But yes, I think it's a fascinating industry and I'd love to get involved with it.
Interesting.
Just in a little while.
We'd really be unique in that one.
Right.
Here's a question from Jane, which you might be able to answer, Mark. Is there actually an equivalent marijuana product to opioid pain management? Also, I understand there are specialists in marijuana retail shops who will be able to provide a correct marijuana product for a customer's needs, such as pain and muscle tension. Is that true that there's that kind of equivalencies or abilities? That sounds more like a pharmacy to me.
I don't know if there's equivalencies between marijuana and opioid. I mean, it's different for different people, mm-hmm. too. I mean, I think you really have to try and determine what works best for you. I mean, I look forward to the day when we're able to do more research to try and determine, you know, exactly what marijuana can help and in what way and how is it different than opioids. But, you know, until it's allowed, the DEA takes it off of a Schedule One and there can be more research done, you know, as the doctor who called in before said, there's no, you know, class, I believe you said Class A studies. Well, you can't really do any Class A studies until it gets taken off of a Schedule One. So, you know, that's one of the reasons I opened the lab, is that I really hope someday that I can be a part of research that goes into determining, you know, what its medicinal properties really are.
Interesting.
And as a state, they have said that we can't say anything's medicinal. We specifically are barred from terminology like that. So. Yeah. I look forward to the day when there's medical studies that we can, and then I think that's the only way that we'll get that law fixed, is when they can say there's 15 studies that show there is a medicinal value. So I should be able to sell it that way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a question. Steven's on the phone from Anchorage. Steven?
Yes. Anyway, I just wondered, talking about Schedule I drugs, I'm just wondering why Congress hasn't made so many, like half the prescription drugs these days, Schedule I, when they have a list of 20 side effects, including death. And then I'd like to know the congressmen that are so adamantly against, on a federal level, the legalization of marijuana, while simultaneously being okay with those prescription drugs that have those side effects, including death.
Who knows?
Well, I will say one of the number one lobbyists who is spending the most money against legalizing marijuana is the pharmaceutical industry.
Absolutely.
Because they know that people, if given the choice, would much rather have a natural substance that provides pain relief than an opioid that has 15 other side effects.
All right. Well, and we're in the political season, so you can ask your candidates that are running what they're going to do about that, because it certainly seems that Alaska has gone in this direction. Boy, the hour went by really, really quickly, and so many interesting questions, but I'm sure we're going to be talking about this much more in the future. Mm-hmm. Because there will be questions we haven't even thought of that
Absolutely.
Will be coming up once these businesses get up and running. I want to thank both of my guests, Lily Bossart. When is Dankeridge actually opening?
Early December.
Just in time for Christmas.
Absolutely. And a Merry Christmas to Anchorage.
Are you going to have, like, Christmas wrap?
That's an excellent idea.
I think it is a good idea. I want a percentage.
There you go.
And Dr. Mark Malagodi, CanTest is already in business, and you're already testing marijuana.
Yeah, we test both personal and commercial grow. Yep.
Okay, so somebody could bring their own.
That's right.
All right. Great. Well, thanks to both of you. Dave Waldron is our producer. My name is Charles Wolforth. I'm going to be back again next week. We're going to do a show the morning after the election with a couple of political pros to talk about what happened. So please join us next week on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.